Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. As always, we're grateful for everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that they start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please do so. If you're live, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. If you prefer not to do that or you're listening through the archives, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. And you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question through the email, we'll address it on the internet show, and then as time allows, send you a notification about what day or time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. We greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service. That's just a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you, what's working for you, what's resonating for you, etc. So, again, this is a Thursday, and that means we're going to have a support group tonight, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. It's absolutely free for people to join. All the information you would need to join us or to direct somebody else who might want to join us is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. Please remember, if you go there, there's a separate login info page for each of the 2 days, one for Thursday and one for Tuesday. And we would be grateful if you would join us or pass the information along to somebody you think might benefit from participating in that type of communal support for this work. It is it's a privilege to be associated with people who are working, choosing to spend their time to work on getting better at managing their own emotions, getting closer and closer to that 100% responsibility for the experiences they're creating in their life. That's the core reason that we do the support groups, and it's one of the many layers of benefit that we, each of us, see. It's just, you know, one layer of benefit. There's a community support, there's synergistic energy, and there's also the practice of the use of these tools, and then the residual benefit from those practices. So, plenty of time for comments, questions, answers, testimonials. 563-999-3581. You call that number and press 1. We can have a conversation. 610, is this Susan?
Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
I've been, thanks. I've been thinking about what you said about Robert Whittaker and also that interview that was a replay the other day by, is it Bonnie or Bobby Seam?
Brooke.
I forget her first name. Brooke.
Brooke Seam,
yeah,
S-I-E-M.
B-word. Wonderful. I've been, you know, sitting vigil and trying to be a healthy, upbeat, codependent companion to my son while he goes through a really hard time. And one of the things that I think may be a factor for him is that he's on many different medications. He's on an antidepressant, an anti-anxiety pill, then blood pressure meds, cholesterol meds. He's only 51. He's not overweight. He doesn't get enough exercise. He kept running up and down stairs at the hospital. But he, when Brooke Seam said that during her time of being on the medication, she was still suicidal and figured later that she had been depressed all that time. She didn't know how to compare herself to anybody else. I told my son about her, and he said, you know, if I stay at my job, I just won't feel safe to go off medications, which I would love to do. I'd love to get really well on my own. I do think the human body is built that way, to do that, to heal itself. And so he's been looking for a purpose in his life if he stops practicing medicine. And I said, how about the purpose of getting yourself well? That could be a major, you know, a lot of, do a lot of exploring in different modalities. Find tools for yourself. Find ways of being well. And then you have the latitude to find what you really want to do in life. And it might be to go back to being a surgeon again. Or not. And he is agreeing with me for the first time, which is very heartening. And so I went online just this morning to look up Robert Whittaker, which you said you did an interview with him, and it's about to go up on the, in the video lines. And I found some very short clips that he made some years ago about the same thing, about the fact that psychiatrists are pushing the meds because they have their reasons that are not based on science. It's more like this pharmacological people are working with them. That sounds very cynical, and I don't think that's probably true for many psychiatrists. On the other hand, he said the science does not say that depression is helped by these SSRIs, because they don't even know for sure whether it's an SSRI deficiency in the first place. They only know that when you take an SSRI, your serotonin goes up. And then maybe when you go off of it, you have to readjust. But he was talking 4 years ago. He was mentioning plasticity and the fact that the brain finds its ways to adjust to various assaults and things. And maybe these aren't necessary. Anyway, your exploration with this and your interview with Brooke Seaman and Whitaker are so synchronous with what's really been a family crisis here. And not only with my son, but my grandson, who's acting out so much, is also on many medications. His father was a pill-popping dad. If you had a bellyache, you got a pill. He was constantly going to the drugstore for various things to take to make himself better. And this particular grandson has grabbed onto that and thinks the answers are in those pills. And I'm figuring that maybe besides the weed and alcohol that he's taking all the time, that these medications are hurting him too. So I guess I just want to say thanks for the synchronicity. How that was arranged, I don't know, but it's been useful.
Well, and there is another interview that I did with Robert Whitaker, which was about 3 years ago, which talks about his two books. One of them is Mad in America, the history of how we've looked at and treated mental illness from the Civil War to today. And then the other one is Anatomy of an Epidemic. And that book, even though it's big and long, is really essentially, it presents a lot of research that's out there but it's not promoted. And it's not promoted because it goes against what the drug companies and their funding of the psychiatric schools, et cetera, and medical schools, what they want to have out there.
Right. So when you're talking about an anatomy of an epidemic, it's a mental health epidemic, not COVID. That could be confusing to people who think of COVID as synonymous with epidemic.
I'm going to read you the subtitle here in just a minute.
Okay.
The subtitle of the book, I believe, will take away any confusion. Let's see.
Okay.
Because, the subtitle of the book is Magic Bullets, Psychiatric Drugs, and the Astonishing Rise of Mental Illness in America by Robert Whitaker.
Wow.
Anatomy
powerful.
Of an Epidemic.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful book. He's won awards for it, et cetera. And it's a long book. It's a long slug. So rather than say, go read the book, I recommend to people find an interview like the one that I did with him where he gets a chance to talk about what's in those two books. And you can find that on the journeysdreampodcast.org, or you can find that on the onyourmindpodcast.org. And if you request it, I'll send you a link that's just specifically to an isolated web page where that's all that's in it is, or on the web page is, you know, the link to that interview. You can see it on YouTube. You can see it on a podcast player, and you can read the transcript of it. And it's just an isolated page that has that on it, so you don't have to go searching.
Well, that would be great. I'd appreciate it very much. Was there
so you would want that isolated page sent to you?
I'd love it if it's right ready and you don't have to do a lot of work to get it.
Yeah, I do not have to do a lot of work to get it. We're in the process where they're hoping to be able to make that an active feature on the website, but it isn't up yet.
But I have
access to it through a spreadsheet that just I can type in and I can then copy and paste the link to you, and you'll take you to a page where all that's on that page is my interview with Robert Whittaker.
Great. In the newest interview you did with him, has there been a lot of new material come out?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, boy.
It's just about, you know, it's about a cover-up.
Yeah.
It's about fraud in research.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just that, you know, there's just it's a very intense thing that there's a fraud that was perpetrated that said, hey, here's this study with 4,041 people, and 70% of them got into remission of their depression by this protocol of antidepressants.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not true. Only about 3% of them went into remission.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's a pretty big discrepancy. So we don't need to, you know, belabor that point. It's just something that's
right
out there people can read about on the website Mad in America. And I offer it not to say, you know, you shouldn't take antidepressants or they're bad for you, but just to help people understand that what you're being told by basically the powers that be, right, the media and a lot of, not all psychiatrists, but a lot of psychiatrists, and they're only telling you that because that's all they know, right? That's what they've been taught. And here are the research journals telling them, hey, look, these things are 70% effective. And unless you get an investigative reporter in there to look at it and tell you, wait a minute, we got access to the patient-level data and we found out this is all a lie. Unless that happens, you've got psychiatrists that are thinking, hey, there's new research that validates what we're doing. So they're just doing what they think is best. It's not an attack on anybody. It's just a way to make people be aware and conscientious consumers that can advocate for themselves. That's the benefit of a website like madinamerica.com. Lots and lots of good information.
Wow. And there's also the placebo effect. And I'm wondering if this is a case with a good friend of mine who managed to stay off antidepressants despite depression that she was trying to live with and heal from, finally decided it was just too exhausting. She was too busy with her life and wanted to be productive in work. So she, in her work, so she went back on an antidepressant she hadn't been on for years and is telling me that she feels a lot better. And I love that she's feeling better, and she says she's productive and she's doing well. And I'm wondering if part of it is that she believes that she's getting some help. We'll never know the answer to that one.
Well, And some of it, for some people, is because if they just go off these things quickly or even cold turkey or even a slight gradation down without paying attention to it, they can develop rebound effects and be miserable.
Kidding, yeah.
And it's not an indication that they need more of the medication. It's an indication that they're having a negative reaction to the quick change and their body adapted to, you know, I just flashed on the idea that Michael Rice was saying, you know, he's vegan or whatever, vegetarian or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
he used to be a real big meat eater. His whole family was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think he said it took him something like 11 or 14 years to make the transition from being a big-time meat eater to being full-time vegetarian. Because, and he talks about it, just think about this and the comparison that might be. If his body is used to throwing away 80 or 90% of the protein he eats because it doesn't need it and it would be toxic to keep it all, right?
Yeah.
Then if he goes down to eating almost no protein in a meat source, then it starts to throw out 80% of the protein he's getting from his legumes and his leafy greens, et cetera, then he may not have enough protein to have the body function well. Well, so the same kind of thing might be thought of as a way that if my body gets used to functioning and my brain is functioning with, you know, 20 or 40 milligrams of an SSRI for 3, 4, 5, 12, 18 years, whatever it is, and then all of a sudden I quit doing it, the body, it goes into shock because now, you know, it had this thing that made whatever serotonin that my body would create, made it available for a lot longer in my body, and now that's not there. So whatever serotonin my body makes isn't enough to, you know, keep me functioning in a balanced way, and I just go into shock. I go into all kinds of, you know, people report things like brain zaps and difficulty sleeping and incredible anxiety and suicidal thoughts and stuff like that. So it's not that, oh, I need more Prozac in my system or more Celexa or whatever. It's that I need to go off of this in a much more gradual way so that my body can acclimate to this dramatic change. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I'm thinking about another grandson who is on 80 milligrams of Prozac now because that made his OCD much less troublesome. And he says, I talked to him for an hour yesterday. He's such a neat kid. He says, you know what? I do feel better with that, but I can't play tennis. I have no energy. I'm falling asleep in class. And there are other side effects. And he said, I don't like the side effects, but I need a break from this OCD, and I'm getting it, but I don't know how long I can stay on this stuff. And he's only, what, 17 or 18? Oh. It's heartbreaking, you know.
Yeah, and there's a lot of complexity to it, and what I just recommend is that people work with the best experts they can find, and hopefully they find somebody who's not just allopathically trained, because there are severe limitations to what the allopathic system teaches and makes available to its practitioners.
And it's so interesting, I'm popping all over the place, but this DNRS program is a drug-free set of tools that really handle anything that's not right in the system, the whole system. They talk about the limbic system, but I don't understand enough about what exactly that is to isolate it from every other function. But there are some wonderful things out there, plus not to mention the tools that we use, that could possibly be the cure, not just relief, but a cure.
Well, I have hopes for people in general, and I have hopes for the profession that is willing to change and grow. And there's a lot more, especially if people are willing to explore things outside of what's been programmed into us, right? If we just keep questioning and...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the problems with using tools is they may not have immediately lasting results. Like, it takes 50 worksheets or however many. There is work involved, whereas a pill is like a McDonald's. You just go through and get the hamburger.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Dr. Tim, I don't really want to take up too much of the show. Why don't you carry on? I'll be listening. But
all right. I will send you that link to the Robert Whittaker interview I did some years ago.
Great. Thanks.
All right. Blessings.
See you too.
So we have plenty of time for comments or questions, and we have about a half an hour left. I don't know what's going on with Blog Talk, but I got kicked off a couple times before the show started, so it was nice to have Susan on the call to make sure that we're still reaching an audience somewhere. And the chat room has shut down on me twice. I'm not going to try to reconnect because it's possible that Jeannie or somebody else has logged in. And a while back they made it so you can't have more than one person in as the host. So here's hoping that we have, that we're being heard and that there are people who want to get on the chat or in the phone queue, they can. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, Celinda here, Dr. Tim. I would like that list too, if possible, and I am definitely listening to the show. And I remember reading Candace Pert one time. Actually, it was a Sounds True CD set, and she was saying, she was talking about the antidepressants way back in about 20 years ago, and she was saying that with her research on the serotonin and the marijuana receptor site and all of that, that the were more like flashes of light than hunks of meat. And when we go putting things in our body that to mimic the natural hormones, we have no idea what we're doing, because we think, for example, with the thyroid hormone or the antidepressant, that we are treating the problem, when actually we're causing more problems because of exactly what you were sharing with Susan today, because we don't know all of the factors that these hormones affect in the body, all the body parts or systems, and we're going and we're shooting the body full of these things arbitrarily, thinking they're only hitting the mind or hitting the thyroid or whatever we're targeting, and find the pancreas, and finding out that we're basically shutting the system down. Or that's my interpretation of what she was saying. We don't have a clue what we're doing.
Yeah, well, it's very true. It's known that we are very young in our science, and that most of our scientific approaches have been based on an assumption of solid physical energetic systems rather than fluid energetic systems. And so there's all kinds of ways in which we are, you know, trying to remove a splinter with a jackhammer kind of thing. And so, you know, we don't really understand all of the levels at which we don't understand. But it's very powerful, very subtle. And our whole system of absorption of nutrients and the gut biome, they're only in the past, you know, 20 or so years, talking at a general population level, talking about the gut biome and having awareness that we need, you know, the benefit of fermented foods and a healthy gut biome and how it's tied in with all kinds of different physical, mental, and emotional problems. So anyway, enough of that. Thank you for the call. Anything else you'd want to add?
No, it might be raining this afternoon, so I'll have to see when I can go to the garden. But I wish you all well, and I am definitely hanging in there all the way. And that list
all
would
right.
be wonderful because I can practically use it to share if that's possible.
Well, and it's not a list. It will be a link to the web page that has the interview I did with Robert Whitaker.
Perfect.
The one I did a few years ago. All right. Blessings. Thank you for the call. I will mute you so you can listen in. And if nobody else puts a hand up, I'll return to the Way of Mastery. I basically had finished Lesson 17 yesterday when I was reading. And where we left off on that lesson, we're talking about we're being invited in this work to turn back and look at everything in our lives, all of our creations, recognizing that everything that we've experienced in our life has been part of our creative process. And to look on everything we've ever experienced with childlike curiosity, with allowance and acceptance and surrender. And the example they were using is, oh, I remember when I was in juvenile hall because I stole the bicycle of my neighbor. Oh, what was going on in me back then? Wow, I guess I was trying to get attention from my dad. So, I wonder, is this idea of seeking approval as a pattern still driving my behavior now? Is there any trace of it left? Am I still looking for approval from anyone in any way? And then just breathe and soften and look at it with childlike curiosity. That's the invitation in this work. It says, self-awareness is everything, for it is the capital S self that you, without even realizing it, you most want to realize. You long to know your true self. And then it says, beloved friends, we love you, but we cannot make your journey for you. We can only walk with you on the way that you choose. You can utilize your relationship with this Shanti Christo, this process of birthing a Christ. You can use these tools, the Yeshua letters, the Way of Mastery books, the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, the Way of Knowing. You can use them to fully awaken. Or you can come close and then decide it's uncomfortable and run away. It's okay. When you do that, you will only run to another structure or form of energy, another web of relationships. Eventually, that will force you to stay with what is uncomfortable, not as a punishment, but as a catalyst for growth, a catalyst to help you want to learn, in order to grow, in order to heal, in order to move into your true, easy, instantaneous awareness that your true nature is love. Not that you say to somebody, oh, yes, I love you, but you have this whole body response of extending your true nature to their true nature, something that is this full feeling that's radiating through the entire body-brain system. For the ultimate state of consciousness is not an aversion of this world. The ultimate state of consciousness is the embracing of this world. There is no greater sense of freedom than to be able to abide right where you are as the one who is free. Be you therefore at peace this day, beloved friends. Be you therefore at peace always. Amen. Reminds me of the saying that, you know, peace is not an absence of a storm. Peace is being able to find the calm within yourself in the middle of a storm. There is no benefit ever derived by blaming others for what I'm experiencing inside myself. This is the core observation in this work. Every time I try to blame anyone or anything outside of me for my work, I create a prison, or my experience, I create a prison. And the only way out of that prison is to wake up and see, ask to be shown if I can't see it directly, wake up and see how I'm actively creating whatever I'm experiencing in the moment. And if I'm willing to ask to be shown, if I'm willing to turn the focus inside myself, if I'm willing to recognize that the breath is a tool, as a catalyst to keep things moving and stay fluid so they can move out of me, there's just no end to how much better my life can get if I'm willing to do that. That's what all these teachers are telling us. And Michael Singer talks about this bliss state that yogis live in or tap into and get access to. And the essence of our work is we've all got that. Every one of us has the potential. To tap into awareness of our true nature as love in each new present moment. And when we do, our experience is that we are love, and we feel loved, loving, and lovable forever. We feel the bliss that some of the yogis talk about and invite us to. So lesson 18, the next lesson in the Way of Mastery, talks about how, and the title of it is, that the highest work is not becoming some great being. The highest work is not saving all the children on the planet or ending war. The highest work is embracing and forgiving your past. And again, forgiving in this work means dismantling the judgments and the perceptions about your past. And the text reads, once again, we come forth to abide with you from that place which has never truly been left. We come forth not as those who are apart from you, but as those who walk with you on the way that you have chosen. We come as those who have sent forth the call to awaken, the call to heal, the call to arise, and to welcome, capital L, love, into every dark corner where once the ego had sought authority. So as you look back on your life and you go, oh, boy, what an idiot I am for this, and, oh, my God, I was so lazy here, and I should have done this, and I should have done that, this work is a call to question all of that, to see all of that, to question it anew. And as soon as I said that, I thought about the latest episode of the We Can Do Hard Things podcast, where they have a social psychologist on who's talking about laziness and how laziness doesn't exist. And I'll give a trigger warning for people if you are if you have a hard time dealing with people who are trans, you know, trans male to female, or, you know, gay, or, you know, gender fluid or whatever, then you can stay away from this podcast. But if you can see past any of those issues, there's a wonderful discussion about the false belief in, like, a disease process called laziness. There's a wonderful discussion about the pressures that our society puts on us for these made-up reasons. Men should be this, women should be that, little boy should be this, little girl should be that, a successful person should be this, a creative person should be that. It's a wonderful discussion. Every place in your mind where you judge yourself as having been not enough, made a mistake, I was too lazy, I'm too lazy now, I should get busy, I should do this, when is my work ever going to show up as well as Yeshua's work or Michael Rice's work, or any comparison that we do, and we, comparison itself is a trap. But every time we compare ourselves to something, we come with negative. Lesson 18 says, listen, the highest work is embracing and dismantling any judgment about your past. Bringing capital L love into every corner where once the ego had sought authority. The text here goes on and says, we come forth because we love you. We come forth because we are capital L love, L-O-V-E. We are the energy of creation expressing in form, whether we're in a physical body or we're in consciousness without a body. Energy of love is what you are. And the text goes on and says, above all, remember always, we come forth because this capital L love is eternally attracted to its own. At this level of energy, at the quantum energy level, like attracts like. We are attracted unto you because you are that love, capital L-O-V-E, that you've been sent forth as a ray of light from the holy mind of creation. And you've been sent forth not to suffer in the world, not to tolerate the world, not to become identified with illusion, but you've been sent forth to transform each illusion through the constant practice of your remembering. And what are you trying to remember? Here's a suggested quote of remembering. I and my Creator are one. Only the energy of love, capital L, love, is real. And love alone heals. My commitment is to the reality of capital L love. Therefore, Creator, bring each moment to me that I might learn anew how to love, how to extend love, how to allow that love to transform a temporary illusion into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Herein lies your purpose. Herein lies your function. And herein, and only here, is capital L life. Therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you, you who are sent forth from the holy mind of creation, even as we are sent forth from the holy mind of creation. We are joined eternally. And separation cannot exist. It's a dream. It's a concept. It's not an actuality. That capital L love, which has given birth to all things, is within you now. All universes arise within your true nature. All of creation awaits for you to welcome it, for you to ask to be shown. Herein lies the continuation of the theme that we've begun to speak with you about. All creation, in italics, all creation awaits your welcome. Creation does not wait to swallow you. Creation does not wait to prove to you that you live in an unloving universe. Creation does not wait for you to be as a brick wall upon which you may hit the head. Creation does not wait upon you to scuttle your dreams and your plans. Creation is innocent. Listen very carefully. Creation is utterly powerless. It becomes powerful according to that which you give unto it. You have the power of creation in your mind energy. The value, the meaning, the purpose, and the function of creation are given to it by you. Each of us creates our own. These things come not from the creation itself, but rather they are extended to it. They flow to it. They penetrate creation through the minds, the individual mind that you possess and your brother or sister possesses, those minds, all of which share the one capital M mind of the Creator. Each of you is sparks of the one mind. Each of you are rays of light emanating from the one true source. The text goes on and says, this is why it is absolutely impossible to look upon anything that is outside of you. The great glory of the time given unto you, the time you experience as a body mind upon an apparent planet, upon a physical universe, the great glory of it is this. The gift of time that you remain infinitely free to decide how you will choose to perceive creation, and therefore how you will choose to imbue it with the power that either reflects illusion and the creations of fear and the illusion of separation, or it extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. Each time you think a loving thought, it's giving me chills. Each time you think a loving thought, you have literally blessed all infinite realms of creation. Each time you have unwittingly become identified with a fearful thought, you've created the illusion of separation. The illusion of being separate from the perfect love of creation, and you've denied yourself your function. Temporarily, in that dream, in that moment, because it says quite clearly, here we're using the term separation, in quotes, slightly differently, in that it creates the illusion within your mind that there's something you must separate from in order to find your safety. But that's just an illusion. You are perfectly safe in each new present moment. You are connected to your source in each new present moment. You have the infinite freedom to choose how you will direct your mind energy, whether you will choose to perceive creation as it is in its infinite glory and neutrality and beauty, or if you're going to imbue it with illusion and dreams of separation and fear and all of the emotional stepchildren of fear, anger, hurt, guilt, shame, blame, condemnation, resentment, confusion. The text goes on. The next section is titled, "Your One Function is to Bless Creation." Now, I said as I was reading this last paragraph, it was giving me chills to read the line that says, "Each time you think a loving thought, you have literally blessed all infinite realms of creation." I can't even begin to tell you how many times I deal with people in my sessions where they come in and they are upset. And they think they're upset because they were listening to the news. And they think they're upset because what's happening in name the country. Right now it could be the Ukraine and it could be the Gaza Strip and it could be, you know, the people in America that fill in the blank, do X, Y, and Z that they don't approve of. I can't begin to tell you how many times over the past decades that I try to have conversations with people to say, yes, this is true, this is happening. And in this same moment, millions, if not billions and trillions of times more loving, productive, safe, happy, magnificent things are going on this planet. And you are given the infinite capacity to choose, what are you going to focus on? And if you have something going on right in front of you, within your hometown, within the car you're riding in, within the store that you're shopping in, that you find is bad or wrong or hurtful to somebody, and you have the capacity to intervene in a loving way, please do. And also, if you hear about things that are going on 20 miles away or halfway around the world that you do not have the capacity to directly change or affect positively in this next moment, then the invitation in this work is to choose to think a loving thought, send them a loving blessing. Use your mind energy to remind yourself and to remind all those around you that their true nature is love and your true nature is love. Choose to focus on an absolute truth that's available in every moment, rather than choose that same creative energy to pour mind energy into the dream of separation and the fear that it comes from that instantaneously and all of the layers of judgment and hurt that come from pouring your mind energy into, oh, this is horrible, and oh, I can't believe those people are doing that, and anybody who would do that should be ripped in half and thrown to the piranhas, and whatever your thoughts are, they're all coming from judgment, which we know from lesson 3 in this work distorts our perception, and the process of forgiveness that we're invited into in this work is the dismantling of every judgment and every perception that comes from judgment, so that we take ourselves deeper and deeper into the purity of our own consciousness, the purity of life itself, the purity of the flow of life as creation's energy extending. So this text reads, Your one function is to bless creation. The function of the holy child of creation remains eternally this one, to bless creation and thereby restore it to the perfect reflection of creation's presence, of God's presence, of love's presence. And it says here, the words right in the, I won't change them this time, and God is but love, capital L, love. And then it says, love embraces all things and trusts all things. Love. Love is the nature of your being. When you finally choose to awaken totally, completely, by welcoming capital L love back into your mind, and by becoming committed to resting only in your loving thoughts. We've covered this before. Yes, there will be other thoughts that will fly through. We don't rest in them. We don't pour our mind energy into them. We don't fight against them. We don't identify with them. We don't value them above our loving thoughts. We rest and value only our loving thoughts. And when we do that, we will discover that illusions are just that. They are illusions. They contain no true existence. You have been resting in the holy mind of the Creator eternally. You've never left home. The essence of your awareness, your true nature, has never been chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. Perhaps obscured from your view because of this programming and training that you've been conditioned into to use your creative essence and mind energy to create the dream of separation, to create the illusion of being small and capable of being hurt. So it says, creation then awaits on your welcome. Creation waits for you to embrace it. Creation waits upon you. You as the holy, the anointed child of the Creator. You who've been sent out as that one, capital O-N-E, who is the Savior of all things. You then are the Messiah. You are then Christ incarnate. To whatever degree that you become crazy enough in the eyes of your world to simply assume the capital T truth of life itself, and you become totally committed to listening to no other voice than the voice for love. The last thing I'll read is, for there has been given unto you one teacher that I have called the Comforter. Some call it the Holy Spirit. It's the voice for God, the voice for love, the voice for light, the voice for creation itself, which has been placed within your mind in the very moment that you first dared to dream the thought of separation. The thought of guilt. The mother of fear. And in the moment that you chose to dream that dream, the teacher, the comforter, the Holy Spirit, your connection to those forces which will teach you that, as Guy Finley says, will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught. That's your birthright. It's woven into your very existence. And that's our time for the morning for the first hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. we actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. And thanks for playing the Beatitudes for us tomorrow as we're on the road.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show and a wonderful trip.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Thursday, April 25th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And while we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just make a couple of announcements. One is that today is the book club at 3:30 Eastern Time, and I've put the link in the notes for today if you would like to join in on that book club. It's also on our website under schedule and then drop down to Global Book Club, Why Again? And they're on the chapter of, I think it's called Choosing Love. And so be a part of that. Yinka does a fabulous job with that book club, and we're glad that she invited Michael to be a part of it. And then also, we're coming up on, after our trip, Michael's going to be going to Florida to do a workshop, a three-day workshop, and you can get that information on our website under schedule, and then flyers, events, or you can go down, just go to whyagain.org and scroll down to events, and you'll see that information and where you can log into Dr. John Lawrence's site to register to be part of the Mindshifters on Saturday. And that's not this Saturday, it's next Saturday. And then I'll welcome Michael, and then we did have a question from the app.
Sweet, let's go for it. Welcome, everybody.
It was actually just a question about they were having some challenges on printing or downloading after they completed the app and where to find it. So I've put in the notes for today. There's a video actually on YouTube, and you can access it from our website as well under Apps and More. And it walks you step-by-step how to use the app, but just to answer the direct question, after she saved it, she couldn't find it. And so there's several apps that come on your phone. I have three. One of them's called My Files, and one's just called Files, and then one's called File Manager. So I'm not sure which one your phone will have, but I believe it's an automatic app. And so if you go in there, you'll find your downloads, and that's where you will find the worksheet that you saved from the app. She also asked if I could access it for her, and I said no. The app is created to be totally private, so we do not get your information. It's saved to your phone, or you can print it out. But if you don't do either of those, it just goes back out into cyberspace. We do not have it. So if you have any other questions, I do walk step-by-step through the app, how to use it and how to access your information, where you can save it or print it. So hopefully that answered that question. And we do have a hand up, but I think it's left over from Dr. Tim.
Cool. Well, and also two really nice pieces of information that you put on the website, I'll remind people, if they go to whyagain.org, and then in the very top upper left-hand corner, there's a button that says Start Here, and you can access that video that shows you how to use the app. And there's also a video that shows you how to use the website. And by the way, Jeannie, I've had three or four people in the last 2 weeks who've, and I've not mentioned this to you, who've really complimented the state of the website now. They feel like it's been enhanced tremendously in terms of its functionality. So if you haven't been on the website recently, there have been mega changes, actually a whole new system in place. And so a little easier to navigate. So let's say hello to the hand.
Well, it actually went back down. So after I said that, they must have hit one again to bring their hand back down. So nobody has their hand up. There's no questions out in Podbean.
Well, then let's go back to the Enlightenment book, Day 70 of Enlightenment. And we want to take a look. We're on page 42. And I'm actually going to go back to the top of page 42, although we've covered some of that already. So basically, and this is verses 16 on page 42 from Matthew. In like manner, let your light shine before men, for they will see your good works and then give you homage to your Father in heaven. In other words, each person who observes an energy other than the one they're engaged in. You know, if one's in that, you know, the beatitude we covered when we began this particular passage was about just and fair behavior. People who are not in a mindset of just and fair behavior are not in that mindset because there's some form of fear or lack, trauma that's unresolved. And just the act of seeing someone else acting with integrity plants a seed. You know, remember that this whole thing is, this whole New Testament is about the physics of how the human world works and how we interact in that world. So when you look at a lot of what the Greeks brought in about, you know, judging people and blasting people and all of that, basically what we find in the Aramaic is there's no judgment. Yes, I know there are those people who are going to scream into people's ears, judgment day is coming in. He's going to sit up there and he's going to give it, sock it to you if you don't do what I tell you to do or put enough in the collection plate. Basically, that's a message. But that's not justified in anything in the Aramaic. Basically, wherever there appears to be threat, wherever there appears to be somebody's going to get you, there's no somebody's going to get you. They're just saying, here's how the energy system works. Here's how this human device that we have, this body-mind unit, works within the energy system called life. So when they talk about law and acquainting us with the law, they're talking about bringing us to an understanding of how things work. And so here Yeshua is emphasizing this idea, think not I come to release the ties of the law. And he uses here the word, Aramaic word mnemosa, which is like way beyond the customs of the people. And it's going into, how does this energy system actually work? So I'm not here to release or loose the ties, which lots of men want. They want to be their own lawmakers, because, of course, you become your own lawmaker, you're now God in your own mind, a legend in one's own mind. So I come not to release the ties, but to add to them, and not tying you down to something, but rather giving you a way to understand, and therefore your connectedness to what causes the energy system to move in your favor. For truly I say to you, not until the kingdom of community on earth shall cease to exist will one letter or one stroke of the law cease until all of it comes to be. Therefore, whoever will break, and remember that we're not talking about there's an authority that set a set of rules and you break the rules. You know, we've got an authority that says the speed on the highway is 55 and if you do 60, we say you broke the law. But when it comes to this idea of the Aramaic idea of law, we're talking about the way it works. There's no such thing as breaking a law. You're always operating within the law, the way it works. If you do hostility or fear, you know, there's an interesting passage where Peter's trying to be the hero and save Yeshua from his trial. And in doing so, Yeshua interrupts him and says, Peter, if you use that sword, if you live by that sword, and it doesn't matter whether the sword is a physical one, as with this metaphor, or whether the sword is your tongue or just your mind, if you live by that law of death, i.e. hostility and fear, then that's the law, that's the energy that will put an end to you. You'll die by it. Not there's a big punisher in the sky who's going to come and rip your throat out for it. Not a projection of those who have power person issues, usually related to abusive fathers, and therefore see the Creator as an abusive father. But simply, here's how it works. And in that particular passage I'm referring to where he gave that instruction to Peter, he also directly addressed Peter, remember, as Satan. Now, he wasn't referring to this dude with the red suit, the tail, and the pitchfork that is a projection from the minds of Greek philosophers. He's talking about, and he defines it very clearly, what he's referring to. He says, for you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of the Creator. Rather than being attuned to the law, the way the energy system works, you're stuck in your own perception and your own distortions of it. And if you live by those distortions, if you allow the unjust and unfair behavior to rule your life, then that unjust, unfair, energetic pattern will come back and gobble you up. Basically, that's what he's saying. And so the continuous and the ongoing collapsing of projections from the mind, the ongoing collapsing of perception, which is carbon-based memory, the mind of man, yielding that up to, am I attuned energetically to what is actually happening in this part of the energy system where I'm focused? Am I attuned to that and my place in it? And if there are hostilities and fears in me that take me out of harmony with the love in which I live, move, and have my being, then I'm going to have to give them up. And you remember that group of disciples, we were not told exactly how many were there. We're just told many of them walked with him no more. They said, too hard a saying. Who can understand it? Well, actually, it's pretty simple. You've got hostility or fear in you. You need to apply forgiveness and free yourself of it. Now, I can understand one who comes out of a power person dynamic, out of a family system, out of a cultural dynamic of hostility or fear, being absolutely unable to fathom a world without hostility and fear in it. So if you told me, if that's what I've been steeped in, and I can remember back in times because that was my beginning, if you told me there'd come a time when I could live without hostility or fear, I'd have said, you're crazy. Now, not that I live without any hostility or fear still today. I'm still doing my work. I've still got 1,000 generations behind me just like everybody else. But I get deep, deep tastes of living free of that quality of energy in any way, shape, or form. I mean, literally where it is physiologically experienced in my structure. If at a time when I couldn't have imagined that, I could certainly see when Yeshua said, well, you're going to handle all hostility, fear, and everything. It's a lack of integrity, and you're going to have to forgive those energies and then live your life from the active presence of love. I could see myself saying, too hard to say. Who can understand that? How do these brain cells, steeped in the hostility and fear of my family system, my culture, the world, who could hear that? Who could possibly do it? You know who could do it? The person who puts pen to the paper on day one, and day two, and day three, and day four, and day five, and day 500, and day 5,000, and day 50,000. That's who can do it. So begin, and you know that old saying of every journey begins with first step. Step in, begin to do your work, build new brain cells, and all insane patterns will become obvious as you steep yourself in, consciously steep yourself in the energy field where you live, move, and have your being, which is that of love. Take time. Rather than, you know, you have to get up in the morning and rush off and get everything done because you think your value depends on that, take time to be in that connected space of love to focus in that energy of love to your own mind, to your own physiology. Breathe into it. Take time to allow it to be experienced directly as being reflected through your own physical structure. And as you enter into that practice, as you give yourself time every day to be in and connected to that presence of love, learn to utilize your breath to direct that energy of love to the parts of your structure that hold energetic patterns that result in pain. And allow that pain energy to be dissolved, remembering that love, and I'm not talking about sexual athletics or any of the stuff the culture says, it is literally the actual, literal, active presence of pure being, that when you can let your mind and your nervous system get quiet enough to experience that, even if you can't actually fathom it, if you let your nervous system get quiet enough, just be still. Remember that command that said, be still and know. And breathe. And feel that active presence of love in every cell of your structure. As you breathe with your eyes closed, allow that breath to move throughout your whole structure, down into your throat, your chest, your arms, down into your torso. With each breath, feel that energy moving down into your pelvis, through your legs, through your buttocks, literally allowing yourself to experience the energy in which you live, move, and have your being. And more as you resonate with that, rather than with resonating with the world of hostility or fear, then you will experience and feel that in your physiology. And you're designed to do that. And one of the keys is just to be able to breathe. Pain somewhere in your structure. As you're taking a breath. And fill your lungs and then let that breath go. Imagine that that breath carries as it exits your structure down through your body to any and every part that holds any sort of trauma. Love is the master solvent. If you've been applying abrasives to your tissue structure for a long time, it's going to take some time for that solvent to loosen the wounds. But with time comes restoration. So when the, and we'll be correcting it in the next edition of Enlightenment in passage 19, therefore whoever will break, and it isn't a matter of breaking the law, it's those who would fall out of harmony with the law. And again, it speaks of his commandments, but it isn't a personal, I'm going to demand you function a certain way. It's a, here's how the energy system is set to work. If you work with the laws of pain and trauma and grief, then you'll get to experience pain and trauma and grief. Live by that sword, you die by it. choose to harmonize, if you've been brought up in a world where life has been out of harmony with the presence of love, then the work of choosing to harmonize is going to bring you back into alignment. And those who teach one to fall out of harmony with these laws shall be called the least in the heavenly estate. And that heavenly estate, been translated as the kingdom of heaven, is the community of love. That one who falls out of harmony with the way an energy system based in love works is going to be the least connected to love. And then he goes on to say, but he who does them, that's he who stays in harmony and teaches them, shall be called great in the community of love. And you remember that last beatitude we did earlier in the program? Those who through service work effectively to produce the peace and understanding under and in accord with how the energy system is designed to work. And so the word that was translated, and it's still translated in the text as break, is really, if you look at it, the prefix and the actual word itself, it's speaking about those who will leave, those who will fall out of harmony with the energy system. And he says, I speak to you because if you don't increase your justness, your harmonizing with the law, to exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Remember, the scribes and the Pharisees had tended to become rather self-centered, and there wasn't exactly a lot of justice and fairness. Oh, there was nitpicking about, you know, well, Yeshua said, you know, you strain a gnat and swallow a camel. You're so out of harmony with this yourself, but somebody who does one little nitpicking thing, and you'll be all over them. And he's saying, you have to be better than that. You can't be in a world where you're out nitpicking, looking for the smallest flaws and blowing them all out of proportion, because if you live by that sword, that's the one that will kill you. So if we leave or step out of harmony, then we're in difficulty. And so this idea of kenuthan is to raise from the unconscious mindset that just and fair behavior, and bring it to the point where it controls, it embraces and controls your thoughts, your actions, your decisions, your behaviors. You've heard it said that to those preceding us, kill not, and everyone who shall kill causes a trial for condemnation. You know, when they talked about Judgment Day being at hand, you'll remember Yeshua when they said, you know, let's say there's that particular passage where they bring this woman to him that's been caught in adultery. I mean, she's clearly on the wrong side of the law, according to the scribes and the Pharisees. And, of course, the reason they're railing on her is why? Projection. They've been doing exactly, you know, what did Paul say? He got this piece very clearly. Beware you who judge another, for that which you judge another, you have been guilty of practicing. Why were they pointing a finger at her? So Yeshua understood that. And when they came after her, did he try to defend her? Did he try to protect her? Did he pay the lawyer? No, he just asked them all, well, okay, so I'm going to ask you to search your own hearts. If you're free of this being out of harmony with the law, then you go ahead and you start stoning her. And he knew how to read their heart. You know, we're told in that case he wrote something in the sand. The scriptures don't record what he wrote, but I can imagine it went something like this. And, you know, he wrote, Abby, remember last week when you were with the neighbor woman? And then he kind of gave the finger to Abby. Hey, come on over here, Abby, look. And Abby looked at that, and he knew that he was caught, so he left. And then it was Oiving, remember when you cheated that man last month, the same guy you cheated about 5 years ago on the same kind of deal? Yeah, that one. And what did Oiving do? Oiving left. So And he finally raised his head and he says, "Lady, where are your accusers?" He says, "They're gone. Thank you." And what does he say? "Neither do I condemn thee." A lot of preachers are still waiting for him to come back and do that condemnation thing because they haven't resolved this harmony with law in themselves. If you resolve the harmony with law within yourself, then you are a state of conscious, active, present love, supporting and uplifting one who perhaps at a given moment is out of harmony. But if you're in pain and trauma, pointing the finger, the pain and trauma is caused by what you've done, not by them. And when he talks about, you know, being out of harmony, not everyone who kills or anyone who kills, they cause a trial for condemnation. It's not that we're going before a judge and boom. It's that the act itself produces the effect, the result. That's what they meant. That's what he meant when he said judgment day is at hand. He refused to play the judgment game, and he said, "Well, you know, life is doing that for you already. I don't have to do it." And now when he preaches for you, talking about how, oh, judgment day, he's going to come back and he's going to get everybody. Well, if he didn't do it that back then when the Pharisees wanted to do it, what do you suppose he's going to do when the Pharisees at some future time ask him to do it? Not going to happen. But then he goes on to say, "This I say to you, whoever shall hold a mindset of malice against another." So E-E-K-I, let's take a quick look in the dictionary at E-E-K-I, at the deeper meaning of that word. K, root word, mindset or mind structure underlying judgment and behavior we describe as hostile or malicious toward other human beings. So what do you sow in your own energy field if you're hostile against another? You've just sown the energy of hostility within your own field. You have just set up judgment day for yourself. You just set up a result. You live by it. It's going to come get you. But it isn't going to be because there's some authority or some creator that's going to go, "Ha ha, look, I caught you." So, yes, one who engages in an energy causes a trial or brings about a result that will result in their own condemnation. Whoever shall speak against another contemptuously. Raka, again, let's look at that in 76, was where the Iki is. And Raka is page, let me get over there. So page 91. Pardon me, at the bottom of page 90. So an Aramaic insult, implying that the object of attention is a contemptible person, unworthy of respect. In order to, remember the opening words in the book of John, don't say in the beginning was the word and the word became flesh. They say in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. So if I engage in that contemptuous mind energy toward another, what have I put into myself? Now, does that mean that I can't see another who's doing things that are out of harmony and assess that? You know, I had one of my teachers was a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia when I worked in the Judicial Service Agency in Albany. And Judge Kelly was the next thing to a saint. And he would have some of the most heinous criminals you could imagine come before him, and he never punished one of them, although he put many of them away for life and, you know, for decades in many cases. But it was always, rather, it was never with punishment. It was never with this idea of raka, even the most heinous crimes. It was never with this contemptuous energy. This man was one of the gentlest spirits I've ever met. but he put people behind bars, and just as gently and just as lovingly, hey, buddy, love you like a brother, but guess what? You're not safe in the community. He'd actually say this, and the community took up a collection and built a building with a set of bars around it and asked me to decide who's safe in the community and who isn't, and you're not. Therefore, I'm going to sentence you. Not, look, you rotten SOB, I'm going to get you. That would have been his own self-destruction. So it doesn't mean we can't see something that's out of harmony and address it in the culture, but can I stay connected to love in that state? Can I stand at the same time as I observe a behavior that one might consider abhorrent and still be an uplifting energy for that person? That would be the test in that regard. So whoever shall speak to another as an object of disgust causes a trial. In other words, brings about a result. Not before an authority, but sown, built within the whole energy system called life. Thus, when you bring your offering to the altar, and there you remember that someone holds a grudge against you. You know, here we're tapping into the Course in Miracles method of assessing where you're at in your process and in your work. And the first test that it asks you to take a look at is, when you think of anyone, are you in perfect peace? And that's the easy test. The tough one is, when they think of you, do they share your perfect peace? And if not, then there is an energy that's still moving that you're still hooked into that on the next subtle level you must become aware of and free yourself some. There is that sort of energy. Make sure you're in a space of continuously cleaning up any part of your mind that holds any form of hostility or fear. Reach agreement with your adversary at law quickly while still with him on the road or on the way, lest he deliver you to sentencing and sentence deliver you to the jailer to be cast into the house of bondage. In other words, wherever there is that kind of painful event between yourself and another person, do the work inside of yourself to return to a space of peace, because that energy which you are delivering to your own mind is going to literally turn into chemistry within your structure. And then he says, if you get committed to the jail, then until every penny's paid. It's a metaphor for until you've worked through every energetic assault in your own physiology. And hostility of fear in any of its forms is an energetic assault. And it's going to keep producing results in, or what they're calling the condemnation, it'll produce results in the energy system that will show up in your physiology, your emotions, your perceptions, your decisions, your behaviors. You've heard it said to commit no adultery, but as opposed to this, I say to you, whoever looks upon a woman with lust has committed adultery in his mind. Now that takes everything to the next level of cleaning up. You know, we live in a culture that has said you can look, but you better not touch. Excuse me? It's all energy. The system doesn't delineate a violation, whether that violation energetically happens in your mind. Remember, the body-mind unit can't tell the difference between a real and imagined experience. If I set and imagine an assault of someone, then my physiology experiences the result or the effect of that assault. Tough one in this culture, because we've been so loose with how the culture gives us permission to do things in our minds as though it has no meaning. And my offering would be it has tremendous meaning. And so allowing yourself to become aware on the subtlest of levels becomes key. Now, should your right eye cause you to offend, you wrench it out and throw it away from you, because it's better that you to be less one member than your whole body be cast into suffering. Now, I think we're talking here about a metaphor, because remember, he's just spoken about if you do it in your mind, if you think about, you know, they say, well, if you don't commit adultery, then that's okay. But if you do it in your mind, then you have done it. It's the same as if you've done it physically. So I'm not sure. Now, there are many people who pound the Bible and say, yeah, if you're right, I offend you. And you don't see too many one-eyed, one-fisted people around who insist that others live by that. So if your right hand offends you, detach it, remove it from you. Again, he's talking here about what you're doing with your mind. It's been said that whoever would sever the ties with his spouse must give her a letter of divorcement. But I say to you, whoever severs ties with his wife except for her willful wantonness causes her to become adulterous. And he who takes one so left commits adultery. And this idea here, as opposed to addressing divorce, actually, you've got to put this one in cultural context. If you understand the cultural context, and this makes a whole lot more sense than this, you know, conversation that goes on here in the culture. But there was a process, you know, back, you know, in these times, a woman had no rights, and she was basically property. She was owned. And if a man decided he wanted to play footsie with somebody else without giving her, and he's saying, you know, if you're going to divorce, you've got to give a bill of divorcement, without giving one, what they would do is, and it was called putting her out, he would put her out. He'd kick her out of the house. Now, she couldn't go and, you know, take up another relationship or, you know, and she couldn't hold a job. She was like basically in limbo. So what he was referring to here was this idea of putting a woman out. And he says, you guys got to stop doing this. Because what would happen, this woman would have no way to make a living. She'd basically be just, you know, hanging around property-wise. And, you know, maybe a year later he'd say, oh, yeah, well, come on back in. And, you know, it'd be like a yo-yo. It was a really disgusting system. And he was speaking against that. And again, you've heard it was said to your ancestors to be not deceiving with your oath, but to fulfill it for the Creator. And basically making sure that what you said with your lips, you lived in harmony with that. Because if you did something different with your mind than you were doing with your lips, the mind would be the governing energy and would create results, or what was called judgment. Again, judgment day is at hand. The results are going to come out in the wash right here and right now. But as opposed to this, I say to you, do not make an oath. Not by heaven nor the earth. It is in the domain beneath his feet, and not by Jerusalem or the kingdom of the great city, pardon me, the city of the great king. Do not swear by your head, because you are not able to cause one single strand of hair to be either black or white. Instead, let your words be yes, yes, or no, no. More than this is from evil. In other words, make sure that you are cognizant of the effects of whatever energy you're engaging in, and stay in integrity with yourself. Not because somebody's watching, but because you understand how this energy system called life works, and you stay in harmony with it. You've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But as opposed to this, I say to you, do not compete in kind with the one who's off target. You know, idea of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, you still hear people quoting that today. It's a very popular saying for those who are wanting to take vengeance. But when you go back with the mindset of Rockman, this is where, you know, when they said Rockman, this filter in the frontal lobes of the brain, they said, upon this hangs the law and all its prophets. When Rockman is active, you'll be able to read and understand what those words were saying. And so people, even today, as I say, will use this eye for an eye. Even Moses said an eye for an eye, as though Moses was saying, go ahead and take vengeance if you want. But in fact, in context, if you looked at people at that time, the atrocities they would commit against each other for the smallest infraction were just outrageous. And so what Moses was doing, instead of giving permission to act in a vile manner toward another, Moses was limiting any act you could take in retaliation toward another to the level of the act that was done to you, that you couldn't go beyond that. There's an interesting passage, there are many like this, but there's an interesting passage where one young woman's or one chieftain's daughter gets into relationship with the son of a chief of another tribe, and they have intercourse, and the father finds out, and he's just, you know, enraged, and the young man comes and pleads with him and says, but I love your daughter, I want to marry her, and we'll be in integrity, and by the way, I've talked to my father, and he says he'll back me up and do anything you require. Well, the tribal understanding was moving from the cleaning up, the clearing away from one's own unconscious that which did not belong, and that was called circumcision, the cleaning of it, of the heart. And that was interpreted then to apply to genitals, which is, you know, I mean, male genital mutilation is as horrific as female genital mutilation. It's been pretty much eradicated with females, but it still goes on today in our culture. And by the way, the idea of circumcision to the genitals was something that was picked up, was brought in as, oh, this came from God. But if you look historically, it came from other tribes who had that as a primitive ritual, as primitive as female genital mutilation is in the world today. It was the same. They did similar things to men or to young babies. And it's still done today. But, and the reason I'm telling that story is so this young man, he says his father will do whatever you say. And so the father of the girl says, okay, then you're going to join my religion. You're going to become Jews. And what's the first thing they had to do? Circumcise them. How good a fighter do you suppose a man is the day or the day after he's been circumcised? And so this father sends upon not only the young man that had violated his daughter, but he descends on the whole tribe and wipes them all out. The men, the women, and the children, kills them all. Moses is saying, that's got to stop. Eye for eye, tooth for tooth. Okay, if somebody takes your eye out, you can take his eye out. If somebody takes your tooth out, that's the limit. He wasn't giving permission. It's got to be understood in context. Goes on to say, so you've heard it said, an eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, but as opposed to this, I'm saying to you, do not even go into that energy that's so far off target. And remember that word evil is an archery term related to the word sin. Sin, if you fired at a target and you missed the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin, if you missed the target altogether, that was evil. So he's saying, don't even let your mind get involved with that energy that's so off target. Rather than getting involved, rather than playing the same game, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other. In other words, don't let your mind energy become engaged with the energy that is so far off target as to be called evil. And if he desires to lit against you and take your shirt, give him your jacket. He's saying it's not worth the energy of engaging in, because every thought produces a result, literally, in your physiology. If you check out the work of Bruce Lipton, just do some research on YouTube for Bruce Lipton, cell biologist. And he's showing that when we think a thought, that thought produces a molecule in the body. What Yeshua is saying here is, don't let those molecules enter your form. Don't let that mind energy become your flesh. Give away something you have of value, that you consider to be a value, before you allow your mind to even go there, because if you go there, you'll be producing that in your own physiology. And that is a far worse offense than losing something that, you know, you're being sued for. He would force you to go with him for a mile, go with him too. He who asks of you, give to him. Who desires a loan from you, do not refuse. You've heard it said that to have all-embracing love for your neighbor and to hate your adversaries. But as opposed to this, I say, have a mindset of love for your adversaries. Bless him who curses you. In other words, remembering, you know, as we say in the last line of the worksheet, I get the original, they get the carbon copy. Why do I want to offer them a blessing? Because when I offer them a blessing, I get to heal. That energy has to pass through me first. And in particular, there's that passage that you know, and many people, I can remember one gentleman I worked with, he had such hate for his parents that he would just go berserk when I would talk about honor your father and your mother. They deserve none of that. But when you understand that from an energetic level, you know, and put to get this together with the power person dynamic, who is your power person? It's probably going to be one or either or both of your parents. And so if you have hostility or fear toward parents and they're your power person, the more hostility and fear you have for them, though in the world would say they deserve it, the question is, do you deserve that hostility or fear in you? And then you'll notice that for all the world, there's a requirement, according to Yeshua. What do I need to do? What's most important in the law? He says, have Rachma, this filter of love, gateway that lets love into your human physiology, when you think of the Creator, when you think of neighbor. And by so doing, you maintain self. So here's how you maintain your created human essence, which is love. You have this active. And that applies to anybody you think of. The word neighbor in Aramaic is a word that indicates mentally near. Anybody that you even think of, that's your obligation under that law. Well, you know, why don't I just do that with parents? Well, no, actually, what he says is this one group of people, mother and father, that there's an even higher standard for. And he doesn't say you have to have Rachma's included because that's everybody. But then with parents, what it says is you've got to honor them. And what does honor mean in Aramaic? Honor is to bring love into behavior toward them. Well, why would I want to do that if my parents were terrible in the way they treated me? Because you've got a lot of leftover mind energy from your relationship with your parents. And if you bring active present love into behavior toward them, in their presence, your power person dynamic is going to be moving. And as you pass the master solvent love through your energy field, you're going to be freed of the sin. Remember that word sin simply means the energies that are off the mark that came from that relationship. So he's showing us how to do the next level of healing in relationship to the power person dynamic. And I'll offer that is the most important dynamic in the world to heal because it literally runs the whole world. People, when under stress, do whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most. That runs the world. If I actually bring love present and into behavior toward them, it has to pass through my energy field. What does a master solvent touch when it passes through my energy field? My power person dynamic. I get to heal. This is genius level understanding of physics and how physiology works in that regard. So have a mindset of love for your adversaries. Bless those who curse you. Be kind to him who hates you. Pray for those who govern you violently and persecute you. In other words, now remember the word prayer has to do with capturing the energy in which you live, move, and have your being, which is love. So prayer is to set a trap like an antenna to capture and reflect into the world. So what he's saying here is reflect into the world the active presence of love, those who govern you violently and persecute you. Because that's how you get to live an actual human life. Anybody can do the rage game. Anybody can play out the generational patterns, and they yield up their human lives. Literally, the active presence of love in them. Because they don't know any better. And then what he uses, he uses a metaphor. He says, and now you're going to be just like the Creator, who makes the sun rise on the just, the unjust, the heavenly, the evil, and offers rain to both. So he's saying whatever blessing you have, if you're inhibited from offering that blessing to any person, then that person is reflecting to you the part of you that you've projected into your brain's image of them, and it's your healing. And if you can bring love present through you to them, then you'll be the one who heals. Otherwise, the energy system just goes on with insane person bouncing off of insane person bouncing off of insane person, and the whole game gets as crazy as it's getting in the world today. For if your mind is set with love, for those who have it for you, in other words, you get people who cooperate with you, what reward is there? He's saying, don't those who we look down on, the publicans, do the same? And if you acquire of the well-being of your friends only, what have you gained? Behold, do not publicans do the same? So let your love be all-inclusive, even as that of your Father is all-inclusive. And so I'm going to invite you to just close your eyes and take a couple of deep breaths. And as you breathe, allow yourself to breathe in that quality of energy that, if you're not physiologically experiencing it right now, at least allow your mind to go there and recognize that in an energy field of active present love, you literally live, move, and have your being. As you breathe, notice anywhere in your structure that there's tension. And with your breath, allow that tension to soften. And with your breath, move that energy of love through every cell in your structure. If there are places in your structure where there's tension, move the presence of love through that tension by directing it to that part of your structure with your breath. breathe deeply. And allow tension to melt. Allow that person to come to mind that has challenged you or resonated something in you recently that you'd rather they had not resonated. And notice where in your physiology the tension is. And with your inner eye, allow yourself to look into that area of your structure. And just allow yourself to see the light present in that tissue. And if you cannot fathom or cannot see any light there, then with your imagination, your ability to image in, allow yourself to bring in that light to the very part of your structure that has tension in it, pain. Allow that presence of love to be breathed through the tissue structure, flushing out any energy that does not belong, dissolving, melting any energies that have no place there, and replacing them with the movement, with the action and the activity of present love. Bring with that activity of present love the component of you that was described as the light of the world. Visualize that light flowing through your structure to that person who's been a challenge in your world. Let that breath and let that light be extended to them. That they receive from you what perhaps otherwise they would never understand or fathom. Allow yourself to harmonize your breath with theirs. And know that of a truth you are the light of the world. Only light can be with you. Only light can be where you are. Have a blessed day. And the best year yet of your eternal life. Thanks for joining us.